I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Drew Hayden Taylor joins me again. He's compiled and edited a terrific, inspiring collection, Me Artsy. The book features essays from 14 contributors, including Mr. Taylor, who reflect on their various disciplines such as filmmaking, fashion, music, painting, storytelling, and cuisine, and look at how their artistry is inspired by the First Nations experience. For example, in the book, Drew writes about writing for the stage and how storytelling for the theater affected his life and remarkable output as a writer. I'll get Drew to tell us about the notable people that are in this book alongside him and what sort of conversation emerges from a collection like this, which follows two previous books, Me Funny and Me Sexy. Drew Hayden Taylor is the award-winning playwright, novelist, scriptwriter, and journalist. He was born and raised on the Curve Lake First Nation in central Ontario. He has written over 25 books and was last on for his novel, Motorcycles and Sweetgrass. The website for more is at drewhaydentaylor.com. This collection is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Toronto this day, Drew Hayden Taylor. Mr. Taylor, good morning.
Good day, sir.
Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
So what I found quite interesting about this book, and I was telling you this before we started, is just how inspiring these stories are. That there's something when you read, say, even if you just pick up one essay, you can learn something about the struggles that one has to make to get to where they are, especially in the artistic realm. The question that I have, I guess, is where did you find these folks? And there is something that's common amongst all of them, isn't there, in terms of the struggle, in terms of trying to make it as an artist?
Well, I mean, I think that's universal with most artists, regardless of their cultural heritage. We're all familiar with the story of the starving artist, the starving painter, the waitressing actor, mm-hmm. or bartender, musician type thing. So I don't know if it's unique to the Native population, but this group of people, when I was thinking of doing the book, wanting to explore how our Aboriginal heritage inspires and influences our careers as artists, I've been very fortunate to have, you know, worked in this industry for about 25 years, and over the years I've amassed a good number of friends and acquaintances. And when doing this book, I wanted to make sure that I had a good cross section of as many artistic disciplines as I could fit in. I mean, there's 14 essays in this particular book, but needless to say, there are hundreds and hundreds of different artistic choices to be made. So I had to be very specific and very brutal in terms of picking which ones I wanted to highlight within the book. And so I put it together, my wish list of people I wanted to involve, and three quarters of the people in this book are people I've worked with in one capacity or another. Murray Porter, the blues artist, Monique Mojica, the actress, Rostella, who has the School for Native Theater, I mean, Santee Smith, David Wolfman, all these people, in one way or another, I knew who they were, I knew what they did. But also, I've also had the opportunity to make new friends in putting this book together. I'd never had the opportunity to talk with Zacharias Kunick, the writer-director of The Fast Runner, or Kim Picard, who was the fashion designer. So it was a great opportunity to bring all these people together in a metaphorical one room and say, let's talk about who we are as Aboriginal artists.
Well, what do you think it says about this time? Do you think that the greater Canadian populace, say, is noticing First Nation artists more, or are there just more to begin
well,
with?
Yes, I think that's part of it, and I think we, as a Native population, are recognizing these artists, too, because when I started out wanting to be a writer way back in the 70s and 80s, I did not have any role models. I did not know of any Native writers, Native playwrights, anything of that nature, and I'm sure they existed. I mean, Maria Campbell and her book Halfbreed have been out since the early 70s, but this sort of awareness had not made it to my reserve, so when I discovered I wanted to be a writer, I was sort of a little puzzled and concerned that I didn't see any other ones out there. And so within the context of this book, I think it's provided an opportunity to show the youth and, I guess, even the elders of our communities that these are many wondrous and varied talents that exist within our community. And when I was putting this group of people together, I made sure that I had a good section of what we would consider traditional Native arts, mm-hmm. like drum making and the importance of the drum, and also traditional storytelling. But I've also incorporated more contemporary new forms of artistic expression, like filmmaking or
food.
The gentleman, a Haida artist, who tells his Haida tales through Japanese manga art.
Yeah, or the chef, Mr. Wolfman, who practices art and food, I guess, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's as much as an art as anything else. In fact, I often joke about if I hadn't been a writer, I probably would have been a chef, because roughly it's the same principle. It's spending a lot of effort and work on something that other people will enjoy.
Yeah. So, to these two previous books, Me Funny and Me Sexy, these were received quite well, weren't they?
The first one was very, very well. It was a bestseller. I mean, I don't know if it's clinically a bestseller, but it did very, very well. In fact, I remember once taking the ferry from Gabriola Island to Vancouver, and on the bookstore on the ferry, there were two rows of it there waiting to be sold. So it did very, very well, and Me Sexy did not do as well, but it's still very, very popular.
Yeah. So in terms of this series, I mean, what do you want to do with these books? I mean, did you want to change the conversation that we're having in this country?
Well, the origins of Me Funny, that was the first one, was that I have been working in the world of Native humor for a number of years, and one thing I noticed was that in terms of not just the dominant culture, but our own culture, that there was this perception of Native people as the depressing Native, the tragic Indian, the stoic Indian, the disappearing Indian. It was all these negative connotations of Native people. And I had been very fortunate to have traveled to over 130 Native communities across Canada and the United States. And everywhere I went, I was usually greeted with a laugh, a smile, and a joke. And I wasn't seeing this in the media, either the dominant culture's media or our media, and I thought, I want to do something that highlights and celebrates the Aboriginal sense of humor. So I decided to put together this book of essays from myself and various people exploring and deconstructing the Aboriginal sense of humor. And so that did very, very well, and that was the origins of this whole series, and I thought that was going to be a one-off. I thought it was fun, it was interesting, there, let's move on. But a few years passed, and I sort of was noticing the same kind of principle, but with Native sexuality, that there was all these negative connotations about Aboriginal sexuality. Everything about it was negative, i.e. stuff like the only time you heard anything to do with Native sexuality mentioned was high rates of STDs in the Native community, dead prostitutes, or sexual abuse from residential schools. Yet we have the highest birth rate of any culture in our country, so there had to be something fun about it. So I decided to do a book that, again, that explores and highlights and celebrates Aboriginal sexuality, and I did, and it was called Me Sexy. And then again, I thought I was done. I thought I've said, what more is there to talk about? And besides, where do you go after laughter and sexuality? I mean, everything else is kind of anticlimactic.
Right.
You know, me gardening. So I just sort of left it, and then sometime last year it was sort of occurring to me, well, I could always go back to the basics and just talk to all these people, all my friends, about what is it we do and why we do it and what has influenced us in our artistic choices. And it just seemed so obvious that, bang, I was off to the races, and Me Artsy was born.
Yeah, and so another theme that's throughout the book is this identifying as First Nations, which some people have found difficult to do. In terms of your own experience, you've had to deal with identity issues, haven't you?
I made a career from it.
Yeah, so how do you then reflect that, say, in one's art, the output of one's art?
Well, that depends on the individual, how they want to do it. Like, I don't think it's an issue necessarily with David Wolfman or anything like that. Or with me, I mean, obviously I made a selective, a specific decision to sort of incorporate that into my artistic choices by writing a series of creative nonfiction exploring the concept of what it was like growing up in a Native environment looking specifically non-Native. So So I wrote essays like Pretty Like a White Boy, and I put them together into a collection of essays, again, exploring identity, in a book called Funny You Don't Look. And also other stuff sort of came up, popped up here and there, and a lot of my other essays dealing with the topic.
And do you feel because you've done that, there are people in this country or beyond who find it easier to talk about their identity?
I think so. I've had people walk up to me, you know, having read Funny You Don't Look Like One, saying that to a certain extent it changed their life because they didn't know there were other people going through that, that people were saying to them, Funny, you don't look like one, or having to deal with issues around their identity. And when they saw the book and the fact that I explored the aspects from different perspectives, they felt that they weren't alone anymore, and it offered them a chance to sort of deal with these sort of sense of alienation that some of them had. And it was, as I said, the response was surprisingly overwhelming. It got me two girlfriends at two different times who had gone through that whole identity issue.
Yeah, and it must be rewarding. But beyond that, to know that there are people who can speak or who can now, after hearing you, who can give voice to their own experiences.
Definitely, that's one of the unexpected benefits of what I do, of being a writer, that my stuff is not just stuff I make up or stuff I toy with the idea in my own life, but that it also has resonance outside of me and into the larger population.
So your essay in the book deals with your going into writing for the stage, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, very often in the city, a play of yours will open, you know, at least once a year, isn't it, or more?
Well, it depends where, but yeah. Vancouver, I had one 2 years ago, and it's actually being remounted right now as we speak.
Yeah, so for you, the work is awfully rewarding, isn't it? And is it different than the reward, say, that you get if you're writing a book or an essay?
Yeah, I mean, they're all different. Whether it's a book, whether it's a television show, whether it's a play. I mean, with a play, you've got instantaneous response from the audience, and you get to see how directors interpret your work, how set designers, costume designers, and actors, what they see, their contribution to the creative aspect you've started. And with a novel, it's just basically you in a room with yourself and then the reader. And then with television, you know, there's so many more people who have their fingers in it, but you get paid a lot more in television. So each one is a universe onto itself with its own pluses and minuses.
Yeah, you write, and it's a very funny essay, by the way, in the book. It had me laughing out loud in a couple of places. You write in the book about Thompson Highway and what he meant to your career, essentially, and he got you into this, didn't he?
For some weird reason, he felt the need to hire me as a playwright in residence for Native Earth, knowing full well that I knew nothing of theater. I'd never taken a theater course in my life. I'd never written a play before, but he was pretty desperate, and lo and behold, so was I. And so we were two desperate people that found a common venue to tell stories.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you're playing that sort of role for other young writers now, I'm sure, aren't you?
Yeah, I have a lot. It's so weird. I used to be the wunderkind way back in the late 80s when my stuff was coming out, and I was the young, hot kid, and now I'm the old man.
But just as fun, though, I'm assuming, is it?
Yes, that's one of the, you know, one of the reasons I'm still in this game is because it certainly beats working for a living.
Yeah. The sense that I got as well from the number of people that you have in this book, the 14 of you that contribute to Me Artsy, is a sense of humility that you have in terms of, say, having to fail. I mean, art isn't easy, and sometimes you fail to get to where you are, and in the failure there is great wisdom. I'm sure.
Of course, there is. I don't know who it was. It might have been Einstein or somebody who said that we learn more from our failures than our successes, and that is so true. My very first play was a huge disaster, and my second play was a huge hit. So I mean, that, I think that speaks for itself.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mr. Kunick earlier, the filmmaker. In his essay, he writes about just the hard work that he's had to go through. I mean, he was doing things like he was filming church services and the sort on the way to becoming, you know, a preeminent filmmaker in this country. I mean, there is a lot of hard work involved, isn't there? Let's not forget that.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, there's another old saying that, you know, luck favors the prepared or the experienced. And to a certain extent, that's true. It's those people who have put in the hours who know how to take advantage of these opportunities that arrive and milk them for every possibility they can.
Did you find that the you referred to it earlier, as a dominant culture in this country, that they are readily embracing, say, more traditional cultures like the Aboriginal experience into what is essentially Canadian?
Definitely. About 7-8 years ago, when one of my trips to Australia, one of the interesting things I noticed when I was over there is that I was there for a theater conference, an international theater conference, and before every session began, they thanked the Indigenous people on whose land they were on. And I'd seen that at the odd Native thing here, but over there, they were doing it every single time. And I thought that is wonderfully progressive, and it's now gotten to the point here that almost every function you go to, they thank the people whose land all this is happening on. And so it's, to me, it's just an opening, a broadening of acceptance of the original inhabitants of this country and what they bring to the table.
You talk, pardon me, an essayist in the book is a storyteller and talks about that art and how important that is. You're a storyteller yourself. Do you think in your own experience, that's something that you're born with, the talent to tell a story well?
Well, yeah, nature, nurture, that's a tough question. I think it is. I mean, there's another old saying about writing, right, where it's nobody can teach you how to be a good writer, but you can learn to be a good writer. There has to be something to work with in there. And I think, having grown up in an oral culture, I mean, I used to grow up listening to people tell funny stories around a campfire or in front of my grandfather's house. So I sort of had that background, and it sort of, through osmosis, permeated my unconscious or my subconscious. So I find that I can tell all these funny stories in a multitude of different formats. So I think it is a combination of having an innate sense of drama in your spirit and the ability to take that and develop it and make it better.
And a good sense of humor, obviously, as well.
Oh, yes. You can learn and teach just as much through humor as you can through any other way of expressing things. I often like to say that given a choice of making somebody angry, making somebody sad, or making somebody laugh, I'll choose to make them laugh because it opens them up to a lot more than anger or tears would.
So this is the third book in a series. Will there be another one?
That's a good question. I say never. I say never after each one, and as they say never, but again, I don't know where to go from this one. Somebody suggested another title to me a while ago, calling the next book Me First, but I have no idea what that would involve, so I'm just going to sit back and wait to be inspired.
Yeah, until then, though, I mean, there's a lot to be inspired from in this book. In terms of what you've learned in the course of putting these three books together, I'm sure you walk away from this knowing more than you did when you started, have you?
Completely. I mean, each essay in each of the books is a universe unto itself, and it's a window into the soul and the spirit of all the contributors, whether it's in humor, whether it's in sexuality, and whether it's in arts. And the funny thing is, there are elements running through all three books. There's humor in all three books, and there's a certain sexiness in all of them, and just sort of artistic expression in all of them. So they're all intimately united and integral into each other.
Yeah, and does it help in terms of, I mean, in reading the book, I felt rather inspired. For you, I mean, you're an artist. You must walk away from this inspired by all the other 13 folks.
I'm inspired by the fact that there's so many different ways of expressing who we are and where we come from. I love Marianne Nicholson's essay about being an installation artist and drawing that big picture on a rock wall and what it meant to her and why she did it and just all the hard work she put into it. I find stuff like that, what people are willing to go through to pay homage to their history, their people, and to their art. I find that very invigorating.
And so what's next for you? I mean, you seem like a busy guy. You must be.
I'm working on another play. I'm adapting one of my plays into hopefully a movie, knock on wood. And I'm just about to finish a collection of Native science fiction short stories.
I see, yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and it's nice talking again. This book is terrific. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it, Drew.
As we say on my reserve, grazie.
The website for more, drewhaydentaylor.com. The collection is called Me Artsy. It's from Douglas and McIntyre. Do pick it up. These 14 folks in here, including Drew, will yield some inspiration in whatever endeavor you have in your life, as I'm sure it has for me. Its editor, Drew Hayden Taylor, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.